the Mysterious Universe, Season 30, Episode 9. Coming up on the show, we've got the Meng Zhao Guo incident, the lantern-wielding killer apes of Florida, and the hairy leg fashions of the Jovian elite. I'm your host, Benjamin Grundy. Joining me is Aaron Wright.
Jovian? Do you mean as in Jupiter?
Yeah, we were trying to figure out what you call people from Jupiter before the show. I knew it wasn't Jupiterians. I knew there was
no, that works though. Jupiterians works.
I knew there was a word for it, so I asked ChatGPT, and of course it's like, as of 2021, there are no confirmed existences of people from Jupiter. I was like, I know. Just tell me what stuff from Jupiter's called. And it's like, okay, in science fiction it's called Jovian. So I've got hairy-legged Jovian women coming up. This is the style. They let the hair on their legs grow so long that they actually braid it into these nice designs.
Gross!
Especially on the inner thighs. That's where it's the most alluring to have long braided leg hair.
How very apesque of them. Because that's what I've got coming up in our Plus extension. I'm going to be going into the Florida skunk ape. Well, not so much the skunk ape. We will talk about elements of the skunk ape, but I want to talk about potentially hidden populations of escaped animals such as chimpanzees, orangutans, those sorts of things, and the high strangeness that's associated with them. And I've got a little anecdote from a friend of mine who told me about his mother-in-law who lives in Pensacola, right, in Florida. And one evening, she had a very strange experience seeing something in her backyard that could be described as being possibly a chimpanzee. But of course, no one believed her, and even her son-in-law didn't believe her, and I didn't believe it when I first, you know, heard it. But after looking into it and digging a little bit deeper, there's a missing 411 weather element associated with this stuff. Yeah, and there's multitudes, there's similar reports all across Florida. So we're going to go into that a little bit later in the show.
Is this going to be skunk ape-esque or pure chimp madness?
Both. Both. Great. Yes. Yeah. We'll get into some. I've got some pretty horrific videos to show you. Well, one horrific video, which is why it's going in the Plus extension, and also some skunk ape alleged footage that will come through as well.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I've been going into some Chinese content.
tell me about Chinese this. Because you said that you used an app or AI to translate a Chinese story.
Yeah, I went into, you may remember actually, I'm trying to find the image of it here. There's this episode we did on Plus 2717, the Huang Yan Chu incident.
Yeah, and how can I forget?
That was that fantastic story of this farmer in China, in this little village in China, who woke up one day and he was in like a big city and he has no idea how he got there. It's over 350 miles away. The only way he could get there was via very slow trains took forever. Yeah. And he had teleported there overnight. And this this Huang Yanchu incident, this was the start of his saga. And eventually he was teleported to multiple cities. You know, the police would come and investigate why he was turning up, why he had traveled so far. People couldn't figure out how he was doing it. There was no plane routes.
Well, no, but allegedly he was flying.
He was flying, and that's why we have this image here from that episode. He eventually revealed that these two strange men were taking him away at night. You would think almost as an astral trip.
Mm.
But no, he was physically jumping on their shoulders and going across the landscapes of China, going all around the country. So the poster of that article was this guy on Reddit called Moondog151. And so I went back to some of his posts and I wanted to see if he had done anything new. And he actually posted the Meng Zhao Guo incident. And I started reading this and I thought, I've got to cover this because it's wild. We've never really spoken about it on the show. This guy... Here he is here. This guy was, again, it's like a similar tale. Mm-hmm. He was an uneducated farmer, and this occurred in the early 90s. And it's considered easily in China's, like, in their top five weird accounts.
It's
like,
in their annals of paranormal activity.
It's actually probably the number one UFO-type story in the country.
Really?
And, Moondog did a great summary. And I started digging into this story just to see like how far it could go. And because it is a popular story in China, there's all different translations and different versions. So a lot of my day was copying stuff. Like I went as far as found the name of the director of the Beijing UFO Association, right? I translated his name from like English into his Chinese characters, like the name for his Chinese characters. And then I put that into search and found a podcast he was on. I downloaded that and then transcribed it using AI And then I took the transcription and put
in
it
Chinese.
Into the, I took the Chinese and put it into the AI translator, just hoping I would get a story out of it.
And did you?
And it was great. There's all these details that I haven't seen anywhere else in this interview.
Yeah, I mean,
this guy.
That's such a great example of so many of these, you know, foreign language events that occur, you know, whether it's in China, you know, Japan, France, of course, with all the French stories, you know, because there's details that get lost if you don't speak the same language.
Yeah, there's so much there that we haven't tapped into.
Like nuance of the story.
The translation stuff is getting quite good. I've got another book coming up in a later episode that's purely Italian. It's like a 100% Italian researcher. And it's often cited.
Oh, is that the UFO one?
It's not UFOs. It's ancient mysteries.
Oh, okay.
And he was convinced that a lot of the ancient civilizations had technology that we didn't quite understand. And apparently this is one of the best books on the topic, but it's never been translated into English. So I've been laboriously going and copying page by page, throwing it into the translator.
You know what we need to do that with? Fresedo. Salvador Fresedo's work. Because I think there's only one book available that's in English on Amazon.
Yeah, and I've done that one.
Yeah, and you've done that one, and the remainder are in Spanish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll have to see if we can pull those together.
There's a ton of stuff there. So this, we go back to May the 27th of 1994 to Hongqi Forest Farm. This is just outside of Wuchang in China's Heilongjiang province. And there's a group of loggers working away. It's a big forested area. This is like countryside China.
It's already feeling very Travis Walton.
Yeah, well, there's all these loggers working away, and they notice this fireball in the sky, basically, this what looks like a plane about to crash into the mountain. Mm-hmm. And they all kind of stop work and they watch this fireball pierce through the sky, and it starts descending, and it essentially descends into the forest on the mountain. And they all think, okay, it was a plane crash, or it was a helicopter that went down or something. We should all go and investigate. And so there was about 15 of these loggers that immediately stopped work and started trekking up the mountain, and they were hoping to find this wreckage. Now, they thought there might be some survivors, but they also thought there'll be some scrap metal we can sell later on. So that was really their motivation. Anyway, one of these loggers was the protagonist of this story, Meng Zhaoguo. So he was a farmer, barely a fifth grade education. It's worth mentioning that this area in China, this is the northeastern area, and Chinese northeasterners are considered kind of touched in the head.
Really?
Yeah, so this is like the equivalent of the ultimate hillbilly China UFO story. It's like, yeah, I saw a UFO, you wouldn't believe it, son. It's like that kind of
Appalachian Chinese.
Yeah, like hillbilly Chinese. Yeah. So anyway, the loggers, they go up this mountain, they trek, they try and follow where this thing descended to, and they find nothing. They find no smoke, no fire, no wreckage, just a calm, quiet forest. Now, according to the story, 10 days later on June the 6th, our guy, Meng, he decided to trek back up the mountain. Now, not to look for this descended object, but he just wanted to go picking vegetables. So he took his nephew with him, and they went up that same mountain. Now, according to Wang Fang Cheng, the current chairman of the Beijing UFO Research Association, who actually went on site to investigate this case, he's kind of like the Chinese Rex Gilroy.
Rest in peace. Why does he have like an alien body, like cast, you know, like smashed out of the
craft? I'll mention a little bit about the guy later on in the show, but just suffice to say for now, he is the Chinese Rex Gilroy.
Does he have a massive footprint ready to go?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I've been looking for the Chinese Linda Moulton Howe as well. You'd just be Linda Moulton Zhao. So we can find her. So maybe we can find her in a later,
that's
later
terrible.
Episode. So as they walk, they're picking vegetables, and they circle around a pile of rocks, according to the story. And they're suddenly stunned by what they see in front of them as they kind of emerge into this clearing. Later in an interview with the TV station, Meng described what they had stumbled upon. He says about 300 meters away, there seemed to be an object embedded into the mountainside. And behind it, and this is a translation thing, behind it was a tail like an actor's costume. Thankfully,
so obviously that didn't translate properly.
Thankfully, I've got an image I can probably show you here. We'll put this one in the show notes. So it's kind of like a flying saucer with a yin tail on the end of it. like it almost looks like a tadpole. Mm. And that's how it's actually been described in other reports. It's like a tadpole-shaped craft. There were no windows or doors, just this smooth, almost porcelain, clean surface to it. Saucer-shaped, except for that tail, 4 meters high. And he described it, and I don't know if this is like another translation issue, but 150 meters long, apparently. Which is pretty
well. I mean, there's been plenty of reports from, you know, like Phoenix, for example, of football field sized UFOs appearing overhead. So it's not out of the realm of possibilities.
Well, as they approached, he said they got to about 150 meters distance to it. And again, this is just him and his nephew. And according to the story, this object let out this shrieking sound. It just started shrieking. And immediately they both felt like they were being electrified, like this strong current going through them. They couldn't move any further. He suddenly lost all his strength. They tried to get closer from a different spot, according to the story. But again, they felt this electric shock. They couldn't move. Now, Meng reported immense eye pain for some reason, this horrible pain behind his eyes. And he bizarrely claimed that his metal tools were electrocuting him. Like he had a hammer with him and some pliers and whatever else he would use to, you know, pull out vegetables, and the metal parts that were giving him electric shocks, he had to actually give them to his nephew so they could go back down the mountain.
Were they sparking?
It doesn't say, but terrified, both of them run down the mountain, and immediately he reports to his boss, this Zhou Ying, the head of the loggers union. He reports that there's perhaps a Soviet spy craft
that's
on the mountain.
Yeah.
This guy doesn't even think about aliens or UFOs. It's not part of his world. He doesn't think like that. He never even considered it. And so this union boss immediately organizes a search party. He organizes 30 men to go up the mountain and try and locate this. And he also contacts the authorities. Well, he wants to find something before he contacts the authorities. But something strange happens immediately. This bizarre weather event occurs.
Hmm.
Where it's just like missing 411 stories.
It's a cleansing. It's like covering up tracks.
Yeah, this strange storm runs in and just, you know, it's raining heavily for days. And, you know, obviously there's weather like that in this region, but it was the timing was interesting. Yeah. It actually delayed their search party.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Normally with these weather events, I mean, yeah, strange weather can happen anytime, you know, and you can always have, you know, oh, well, that was odd. That was extra rain, extra heavy rain, that kind of stuff that happens. But it's about the recurring patterns. And it always seems to be after something has taken place, the weather comes in and it's so severe that it prevents people from being able to search.
That's right. That's the common thing. It's
preventative.
Stops the search parties. Mm. And they eventually got out there. So this is June the 9th. It was, what, 3 days after he had that encounter on the mountain. And it's a 30-man team. As I said, they're just trying to locate the object. They take Meng with them. So they get close to the site. Meng leads them to the site where he saw it. And they have a pair of binoculars that they're passing around and they can't see anything. You know, they're all looking through. They're at the same distance he was before and there's nothing there. So they hand the binoculars to Meng and they're like, well, tell us what was there. Have a look. When he looks through the binoculars, he sees a strange, tall, humanoid figure standing where the object was. No one else can see it. But when he looks through the binoculars, he can see this character.
And interestingly enough, he was the one that reported that his eyes were hurting, like altering his vision or something.
Yeah, something weird going on. And this figure was extremely tall, over 2 meters tall, maybe even 3 meters tall. And he's dressed in this hooded cloak. In some reports, and they're all varying into different degrees, but some reports said that it had a large, bulbous kind of head. But it definitely looked male.
Plaited pubes?
Not yet. You're jumping ahead. The binoculars, once Meng is looking through the binoculars, he sees this figure pull out like a little matchbox-sized device out of its cloak. And he's watching this and a beam comes out of it, this red beam. And remember, the other men with him have no idea what he's seeing. Like they can't see anything. And Meng's describing this. He's like, there's a man and he's shooting something at me. This beam hits him in the head and he immediately drops the binoculars, drops to the ground and just starts having a full-on seizure. He's, you know, shaking and there's foam coming out of his mouth. The men like try and hold him down. He's fully flipping out. And again, they still can't see anything. Now, they panic. They basically pick him up. They take him to a nearby logging shed. And some of the men keep going on with their expedition. They keep searching the mountainside, but a bunch obviously stay with Meng because he's had this serious seizure. In this shed, he falls into a strange comatose-like state. It's like he loses consciousness. He's kind of in and out of consciousness. And this is where it's not a translation issue because I've seen this in various versions, but the descriptions of it vary. He starts in the Moondog in the Reddit thread said he starts standing upside down on his hands. And I was like, what?
So doing a handstand?
He's doing a handstand? Okay, like that's a bit odd, but not super weird. Like yeah, anyone could do a handstand, I guess. But other reports say that, no, he's actually floating upside down. And I think this was a translation issue from the Reddit thread. But I actually went to that interview I found with the guy that was interviewed on the podcast, Wang Fang Cheng from the Beijing UFO Research Association. This is the guy that actually went there and researched it in person. He said that, yeah, he had a seizure and he was weightless. Eyewitnesses saw him levitating upside down in that shed. And they had to try and hold him down. Like he was kicking the roof with his feet upside down, so floating in the air.
This isn't just some type of, you know, as you pointed out, you know, a translation error or even, you know, kind of like a little white lie sneaking into the story, you know, as the story kind of changes hands.
No,
this guy is claiming that he directly saw that.
I double-checked this from multiple sources. I found an interview with the guy at theworldofchinese.com, which is like a state-run propaganda outlet.
Oh, always reliable. That's great.
But it had an interview with a guy and he said the same thing there. And I found the interview on the podcast found and he was saying the same thing, that this is what the eyewitnesses claim, that he was floating upside down.
I mean, a UFO research organization in China, that seems kind of odd. I'm surprised it would be allowed.
It was really big in the 70s and 80s, but the government, the government made it so that it was regulated. So
how do you regulate UFO research?
Well, if you want to do UFO research, you have to register with the government and you have to be an official organ. Like they just control it. So
they can control the information.
Yeah, after that, it really died down. Like a lot of UFO research groups just basically disappeared because you had to pay fees and it was bureaucracy. And yeah, you were against the law unless you were registered. But, you know, that's beside the point. The point is that all these eyewitnesses claim they saw that. So obviously, you got a guy who's had a seizure. He's foaming at the mouth. He's
floating.
He's seeing things that other people can't see. And yeah, he's floating upside down. They call a doctor. So this doctor comes and I'm not sure if they did this in the shed or they probably carried him back down to the village.
Nothing to worry about. It's just floatitis.
The doctor says he's physically fine, except the top of his head is on fire, like a lava hot to the touch. He also says Meng was carrying a high voltage.
So the high voltage?
When the doctor touched him, he said he was actually zapped. And Meng, even though he was in and out of this conscious state, when the doctor approached him with his metal stethoscope, Meng started to flip out and he didn't want anything metal near him. In fact, it said that he would freak out until the doctor took off his belt and took his watch off and everyone else in the room had to take their belt and watch off because he was so terrified of anything metal coming near him.
It sounds like a form of, well, in this case, cranial tumor, but then you've got this electrical element attached to it. Like, is he's giving out some electrical...
Yeah, he's charged.
Current?
There's some kind of charge. The doctor also said his eyes were dull, his tongue was stiff, and a portion of his eyebrows had been burnt off. Which I thought is like...
Well, that's to be expected with electrocutions, isn't it?
Wouldn't that be, you know, one of the primary things you would mention and that they would notice that his eyebrows got burnt off from nothing? Like he was just standing there and then he turns around and his eyebrows are burnt off?
Well, the guy's been shot in the face with a laser.
I didn't see any of that though. So the doctor comes and they make sure they get rid of the metal. He's also in this strange mental state, as I said. He's showing signs of amnesia. In fact, he, at this point, now has no memory of seeing that craft on the mountain. He can remember his name, like when he actually comes to and the doctor asks him questions, he can remember his name, what year it is, where he is, all that stuff. But when they ask him about what he saw on the mountain, he's like, what are you talking about?
Does he remember the humanoid?
Nope.
So nothing, neither the craft nor the humanoid.
It's like all of that has been removed.
Or blocked.
by this laser beam from this weird humanoid that only he could see. So later that afternoon, this Meng Zhao Yi and a security guard named Meng Xianhai supported Meng. Like, they carry him back home. They let him rest on a sofa, and his mother's freaking out. His wife, Zhang Ling, was also a witness to this weird state he was in. She was freaking out. And the police and reporters got wind of the story, and they started to investigate as well. Officers conducted house-to-house visits. They did interviews with the locals to see if anyone else saw the object. And indeed, other people during this time had seen the object when it descended towards the mountain. It wasn't just the loggers. The police investigation was only a day or two, but...
Well, really, what can you do?
Well, that's what Moondog is saying on this Reddit thread, is that they really had nothing to show for it. They had people that eyewitnessed an object.
But yeah,
that's it.
If there's nothing there, what else can you do?
That's all they had. Then strange things started to happen in the general area over the coming weeks. So, namely, it got cold. It got strangely cold. Now, this is June in what should be summer in China, and it starts snowing out of nowhere. It's like a beautiful, you know, sunny couple of weeks, and the weather immediately shifts and it starts snowing.
Is it a high altitude location there? Is that, you know, something that can occur? Like,
it's on the border with Russia, so obviously they get snow, but it's just, it's very, very, very rare that they'll get snow in June. And yeah, there is a mountainous area, so it's not super crazy. But then,
it's still odd.
But it's worth mentioning. But then loggers and other residents reported seeing, quote, a massive tornado spreading across half the mountain where the object was seen. But the tornado was upside down, and inside it they saw flashing red and blue lights. What is that?
So it's not a tornado.
What is that?
But, you know, there are reports from the west of UFOs hiding within clouds.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Again, worth mentioning. And during this whole time, Meng is just in this weird state. Like, he's, you know, he's totally out of it. He's going in and out of consciousness, mostly sleeping during the day. When he does wake up, he's dazed. He's not communicating.
It's this coffee. This coffee that we've had. It's stuffing up.
It makes you chappy.
I know. I can't pronounce it.
But when it's late, you need it. You need it to tell weird Chinese UFO stories. And then he starts sleepwalking. Villagers find him wandering, babbling some strange language at night, not responding. He starts scribbling strange symbols that kind of look like English characters. Like, there's definitely a Z and an S and an H. Or Cyrillic characters, maybe. He starts scribbling this weird stuff that no one can understand. He starts speaking this strange language. And remember, this guy's not educated. He's barely fifth grade education. So he's sent to hospital multiple times during this period until finally on July the 17th in 1994, he comes back to full consciousness. He wakes up and he starts talking. He claims that this whole time he's been comatose. He's been in another dimension. And he says he's spent this time in this other dimension with a 10-foot tall alien female with six fingers on each hand. And he described her as wearing tight clothes. And when she first appeared to him, only her head and, well, her lady bits were visible.
So... okay.
Everything else was like covered in this skin tight kind of suit, but the good bits are all exposed. And he said the reason why he was in this comatose state, because occasionally he'd be like in this passed out state and he'd be like, get off. He'd be
it's
like,
all that hair coming
he'd be
towards
fighting
it.
Something, right? And his wife would say it's like he's trying to fight something off, like he's trying to punch something in his sleep. So he comes out of this state and he's like, I was trying to stop this like 8-foot tall giant woman from raping me because she wanted to have sex with me. And he said, yeah, he was trying to fight her off. He resisted her for a day until he finally relented. Then he claimed he had 40 sexual encounters with her.
When he counted them?
Here's my AI version of what she may have looked like. I love that he resists and he resists and he resists, then
like,
proceeds
fine,
to
do it 40 times.
Like, once the floodgates are open, it's game on.
He's like, look, I'm going to do it once, but I might as well do it 40 times.
It's just, yeah, it's just game on. And, yeah, this he claims that these lovemaking sessions, during some of them, she would inject him with this weird syringe, this gun, like this weird syringe gun. And he said it was painless, but it gave him these weird warts. Like, I don't know where, but these weird warts would pop up. Otherwise, it was fine. Is it some kind of alien STD gun? Like, what is going on? Anyway, July the 17th was the last of their sexual encounters. And
he
claims...
come home with interdimensional warts then?
Well, he claims that after the act, two male entities appeared. And they basically escorted them from his home to a craft hovering above. And I should mention, these lovemaking sessions, they were in another dimension. They weren't on a craft or anything. They would actually take place above his bed, with his wife sleeping in the bed below. He would like...
So they're interdimensionally cucking his wife?
Yeah, he would hover up out of the bed, and then this 10-foot-tall alien wench would appear and just start making love to him. And remember, she's like 10 feet tall. She's got 6 fingers. I mean, this is full on. And 40 times this guy has to endure this horrific.
Yeah, I'm sure. Oh, no. Stop. Stop. Keep going. Stop.
This horrific escapade. So, yeah, he claims that after the 40th time, they took him actually on board a ship. Now, this is where I'm going to refer to Wang Fang Cheng from the Beijing UFO Research Association. He said, look, I went and investigated with my team. And during the investigation, I had a man with me. His name was Yu Chaojun. He was the deputy director of the National Security Bureau. So they actually had some government officials go and investigate this case. And he interviewed Meng and asked him to draw what he saw. Now he says, look, I have a recording of these sketches. He doesn't include them. I couldn't find a reference to these. But he said it was like a dragonfly-shaped craft, this weird, almost like a helicopter.
So there were propellers on the top or something similar?
He said it had a tail propeller like a helicopter, mm-hmm. but other than that, it looked like a dragonfly. And it had some kind of weird cover on it that was connected to the ground. It's and again, I'm dealing with like weird translation issues. But this thing kind of took them to a larger craft where he's taken aboard and he's led to, again, this tall humanoid male wearing a cloak of sorts. And he's basically invited to sit down. And this entity, again, has a large bulbous head. He doesn't really describe him physically other than saying he's a man. And this entity invites Meng to ask him questions. And this alien, Meng, remember this is 1994, but he describes this man having like a glass tablet. And the investigators, when they were interviewed about this in 2016, said, you know, obviously we didn't have anything like that back then, but he's basically describing an iPad.
I mean, you could imagine something like that. I mean, you've got that coming from things like Star Trek where they had pads and that kind of thing. So it's not out of the, you know, realm of, you know, imagination. But in saying that, you're right, it would have been far more, you know, uncommon.
Yeah, it was weird. And so Meng asked where they came from. That's one of his first questions. The answer that appeared on the tablet, and it was written in Chinese characters, was that they came from 14 star systems away. And he's like, all right, well, that's not very helpful. I don't know what you... Like, if you were an alien from far away in the galaxy and someone said...
Tell me in light years. Light years, I kind of get it.
Yeah, that would help. But if you just name the planet, it's like, what? Okay. That they came to monitor our planet. And there's also some versions saying that they were refugees of sorts. But the next question he asked was, why were they here? And he was told that it was, they were there to watch a celestial event. And he was, like the characters said, it's a celestial event where bodies will meet, where there's different variations of the... Huh?
Like an eclipse?
Well, there's different variations of the translation. Some of it said eyes will meet, bodies will meet. He mentioned, yeah, a collision of eyes, which Meng didn't understand. And Meng Zhaoguo understood that on July 17th of 1994, a rare collision of eyes did in fact occur in our solar system. So this is something that came out later, which caused a lot of people in China to think, well, maybe this guy's story has something to it. Maybe it's real. Because this occurred in July 17th of 1994.
What is this? Looks so like Jupiter.
This was the comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 crashing into Jupiter. This took place on that date, and we've got the, you know, the NASA images of the event. And how could a Chinese peasant, this is the argument, how could a Chinese peasant, barely educated, know that this event occurred precisely on that day that he claimed he had this alien encounter?
Well, I mean, even a highly educated person is unlikely to know that.
Well, today you would go, anyone would know that. It would be in the news.
You could just look it up. Yeah, easily.
But this is a guy who's been in a coma for weeks and
in a rural region.
He's in the countryside in China. And I'm just presuming that they didn't have internet. You know, he's a logger. It's a poor area. I presume.
Loggers in poor areas today still don't have the internet.
I presume they didn't have computers. So Meng also said, this is something I found later, that these extraterrestrials visited him again in 2016 and gave him a piece of this comet that hit Jupiter.
Really?
Now, immediately,
can you analyze that?
Come on, this is nuts. But again, this director from the Beijing UFO Association says, yeah, oh yeah, we got it analyzed. Like, we sent it off to a university.
Like for isotope analysis or something?
Yeah. And it was composed of this incredibly rare precious metal called terbium. And you can get terbium on Earth, of course, but it's very hard to get, like very, very rare.
It's extremely rare, yeah.
And again, this raises the question, how did this logger from rural China get a piece of terbium?
But also,
how would he even know what it is?
Wouldn't isotope analysis reveal if it was on world or off world?
I'm not sure I couldn't find any mention of that. This researcher also said, apart from sharing their purpose, Meng said the aliens implanted a chip in his body for research. It was inserted in his leg through a small cut. You want to see the small cut?
I take it from what you're saying, it's not going to be so small.
That's the small cut. It's a giant gash down the side of his thigh.
That's
huge. Maybe they were highly advanced, except in their tracking chip technology. And it was like getting a Walkman inserted into your thigh because it's a massive
scar. How hard is it to put a tiny grain of rice RFID chip in?
And of course, skeptics have gone, it kind of looks like a chainsaw scar. And he was a logger. Maybe not.
I don't know, though. If you run a chainsaw up against your leg, like, that's going to be a lot more damage than that. Like, yeah. I've heard stories of people, I know it's really horrible, but I've heard stories of people that claim to have used chainsaws to dispose of bodies, and it throws like little bits of flesh everywhere.
Yeah.
Like,
would it be that clean?
It does not look clean, even with a heel. Yeah.
A few days later, he said they took him again. It was his second encounter, but again, there's this scar on his leg. The researcher said whether the scar existed before, we don't know. I can't say for sure.
Sorry to interrupt. So you're saying he got taken again, but I thought he was being taken like in an out-of-body way. Like, why is he getting a physical scar from something non-physical?
I don't know. I'm just going off three layers of translation.
Yeah, right. Yeah, fair enough.
He said, I asked Yu Chaojun, the deputy director from the National Security Bureau, a true expert, an old cop. I asked him if Meng Zhaoguo's story was true, if he thought it was real. He said there wasn't a single lie in it. And according to him and the conclusions from the Security Bureau, Meng Zhaoguo didn't make it up. So that was the official position, allegedly, of the Chinese security apparatus. Now, it's also stated that when he regained consciousness on July 17, he saw that scar on his thigh, but there was this weird jelly-like substance on it, like this gelatinous goo, like your Israeli story from a couple of episodes ago.
Oh, weird.
This weird blue goo. And basically, he was
so it wasn't like it wasn't fat or anything like that, was it? It was coming from within the scar, plasma or anything like that.
No, I don't know what. And his wife just basically threw it out. She just like cleaned it up. She thought it was gross. They didn't keep it or anything.
But you know what's weird? You know, in modern medicine, we use like a, for heat and for burns, it's like a blue gel. I don't know exactly the name
really?
Of it, but it's like a blue gel kind of stretchy material. It's very gelatinous that you place over a scar or an injury and it's used for healing.
Was that around in the mid-90s?
I don't think so.
That's interesting.
Don't quote me on that exactly, but I think it was a relatively recent development.
Now, Meng was relentlessly interviewed and questioned by his co-workers and the security police, but his co-workers grilled him, but they contacted the police again. And
why? Why would his co-workers contact the police?
I don't know. They're just like, we don't trust this guy. He's playing a prank or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Rather than approaching the residents, this is an interesting part of the story. Apparently, the police went undercover because they knew that if they went and spoke to the locals as police, they might not get the full story. So they actually went undercover as a reporter, and another guy went undercover as a UFO hobbyist. And then they went to the locals and asked them and did interviews.
It's going to make you wonder, though, if they're a little bit paranoid about, because as you pointed out, you know, and rightly so, you've got Russia above them. You know, are they concerned about this actually being something real from a foreign power?
Perhaps, but there's just a general hesitancy culturally to talk about these stories in the country. And Paul Dong mentions this in his books from the 1980s about UFOs in China, about how it's just very different to the West. Like, there's not a cultural climate to come forward with these kind of stories. Mm. Even though we have that taboo in the West as well, it's like tenfold in China.
Yeah.
They did get some people to talk to them, and these police officers apparently said when they contrasted or compared what the reports they got from individuals in the town, they said, look, it's not mass hysteria. We can't say this is a hoax. Clearly some bizarre incident has taken place. So that was the official police conclusion, that something did happen. And it was funny because apparently it was said that they're too uneducated to come up with this story. Like, they're, you know, to put it bluntly, the police said they're village idiots. Like, they're not smart enough to come up with this really kind of elaborate sci-fi UFO story. And the Beijing UFO investigator said when he went to Meng's home, the guy did have some books, but they were just like children's books. Like, he didn't really have anything on UFOs or sci-fi or anything like that. He just didn't have any of that stuff. So eventually, the director of the State Science and Technology Commission, so now the government's fully involved, Song Jian, is sent out there to form an investigation team. So they go to the mountain, and immediately they start finding trace evidence, which makes this a really intriguing case. They start finding trees. This is a screenshot from a Chinese documentary. But they start finding trees that are scorched, this whole area that seems completely squashed. They find huge cracks and dents in rocks where eyewitnesses claim they saw the object go down.
So is that entire tree in the background there burnt as well, is it?
It's not a great screenshot, but probably not even worth putting in the show notes.
But it is.
It's allegedly a scorched tree from the mountain. And then in addition to this, in September of 2003, Meng was actually put under a polygraph test in Beijing. And I believe he passed with flying colors. That's what they said. I mean, polygraph tests aren't the best measurements of these things, but he passed the test.
But, you know, in saying that, polygraphs are pretty good. I know they're not admissible in court, but polygraphs have become, you know, pretty impressive about being able to detect when someone's being deceptive. Mm. I mean, the other possibility is that it can't detect if someone actually believes the lie. So unless the guy is, you know, a high-functioning psychotic, maybe that's a possibility as well. But he doesn't appear to be.
So this area was made a national park in 2001. I think today they've got a hotel and restaurant there.
Why was it made a national park?
I don't know. Maybe all the logging was done, or there's some kind of environmental thing to protect the area.
I don't think China cares about environmental things?
Well, at least they pretend to. So I don't know if that's got anything to do with him, but there is a hotel and a restaurant there at the exact spot where the object came down.
The reason why I say that is because, you know, you've heard reports again from the West where it's like there's been a sighting or something and later on, you know, they've concreted over it or it's been turned into a reserve or something like that. Well, that's happened.
That's not the case. You can go get a cup of noodles right at the spot where he was raped by a 10-foot tall alien
because
woman.
They concreted over the site and built a noodle hut on top of it.
He appeared on state TV for a documentary, which is, that's where I got that screenshot from. But
When was that from? Was that like 2004,
yes, from the 2005? Early 2000s. Mm-hmm. But it really is intriguing to hear from this Wang Fengcheng, the guy that was the director of the Beijing UFO Association. He said, look, we went and investigated. He took us out to the sighting where he saw this object. And he said, look, we saw the ground. It was scorched. We saw the trees around 150 meter perimeter. They were all scorched inwardly, like the outside was on fire.
Oh, interesting.
He said it looked like there was a sudden explosive burn, not a slow burn. And the inside of the leaves were charred, but the outside was fine. You know, examples like that. And he said just 4 months later in October, he said, yeah, I saw the site myself. How could I not believe it? I saw everything. Even in Meng Zhaoguo's home, he demonstrated how the alien entered. He said it wore something similar to a doctor's stethoscope. The alien was nearly 3 meters tall and it just passed through the room and bent over so not to hit its head on the ceiling. Another situation he describes that Meng told them about was apparently when they escorted him out of the house, they didn't, like in classic UFO cases, like levitate him out through the ceiling or anything. They came in with an outfit for him to wear.
Like a skin tight space suit?
Like this, he said it was this white, perfectly fitting suit. And he had to get into it. And once he got into this, he could walk through the walls. Like they had to, again, it's like this weird difference in technology. Because you hear now, like, there's all these abduction tales where people just get floated through and it doesn't matter what they're wearing. But back then, it's like backwards rural 90s China. They hadn't quite caught on. It's like a different race. It's like a different species.
Even their technology hasn't just reached that level. Like, they're obviously, you know, improving their technology. So with us, you know, with technology, it takes, you know, decades for something, you know, new development to occur. But with this species, maybe it's just like all of a sudden they perfected the teleportation technology or something.
Now,
but up until that point, they had to wear a suit.
This Wang Fengcheng, he said while he was there, there were engineers from the Chinese Academy of Sciences and Technical Research Institute, and they had Geiger counters, and they were going around detecting radiation.
And
so Meng told Wang where he walked through the wall wearing this weird suit. And so Wang goes over to the engineers, and he says, well, bring the Geiger counter over here and just run it across this wall. And he claims he watched them, and as soon as their Geiger counter hit that spot on the wall, it just went crazy. Like, it started fluctuating. So there was clearly more radiation fixated on this wall that he claims that he walked through.
That can't be healthy, though, that it's generating radiation.
Well, he doesn't mention whether it was a dangerous level, but it certainly fluctuated. The gamma values, he said, fluctuated from the baseline of from the rest of
the
property.
So it's higher than ambience.
So he said, look, I know Geiger counters. I studied it in college. There's no way he could have hoaxed this. It just makes the case more convincing. But it's interesting, though, in this podcast I was translating, he's asked what he actually thinks about it. And this former UFO researcher says, it's funny, as the years goes on, there's less truth to the story.
Mm.
He says what he says now, and this guy's still alive, obviously, is mixed in with many falsehoods. You don't know what's true and what's false.
From him or from just other people talking about the story?
Well, in other interviews I've seen with Meng, he says, I'm so fucking sick of telling the story. Like, I'm so sick. People ask me about the story. He's like, I'm so over it. No, honestly, people ask him, are you Meng from that UFO encounter? And he's like, no, I just look like him. And you just walk away. He hates telling the story. He's so sick of it. So over the years, you can see how you could get loose with it, I guess. Like, you'd get so sick of retelling it, you would just, you know, spice it up a little bit just for your own sake, like just to make it more interesting for you. And that's what this Wang says is occurring, that over time there's, you know, things that have been added that are really suspect. But he says, look, I was there 30 years ago. I saw the site. I saw the trees, I saw the radiation readings, I saw the guy, how discombobulated he was. Something happened out there. And you add to the fact that all those other residents saw that object. They saw it go down and hit the mountain. Something happened. The police conclusion was that it was something real happened. The Academy of Sciences said something real happened. The Security Bureau said something happened. So something did happen in China that day. And I found a very recent update from this story, an interesting one from a Western author. His name's Michael Meyer. He wrote this book called, I don't know if we can see the top of it there. It's called In Manchuria,
mm-hmm.
A Village Called Wasteland and the Transformation of Rural China. I think he wrote this back in 2015. And he's like a travel writer. He speaks the language. So he goes through rural China and gets all these interesting stories. And he actually interviewed Meng like years ago as well, and does a follow-up interview in this book. So I bought a copy today, and you know, he gives a background of what he's doing now. Like, he's actually works at a university now, and people give him gifts. Like, he's got this flat screen. When he first interviewed him, he had this flat screen TV, and he just lived in this hut. Like, he has this hut, this rural hut in China. There's nothing in there. You can't even get a signal. And he's got this massive, like, Sony flat screen. Like,
why would someone give him that?
Because they just love his story. It's like some rich businessman was like, oh my God, you've got the best abduction story ever. Here's a flat screen TV. So he's just got this flat screen in this little dingy hut. But yeah, he's like a celebrity. And Michael Meyer tracked him down and basically got him to retell some of the story. And he said, look, yeah, I hate telling this story, but this is what happened. After I was taken, I woke to find myself floating above my house, my kung, my little hut. And I saw my wife sleeping beneath me, and then a 3-meter-tall, 6-fingered alien woman with thighs coated in braided hair started straddling my waist. Mr. Meng and the alien copulated for 40 minutes in that first encounter, he said. He then said she then disappeared through the wall, and I floated back down to bed. She left me with this. And the author, Meyer, says
space
that
herpes.
At this point, he just starts taking his pants off. I'm like, what is left you with what, dude? What's
like I said,
down
space
there?
Herpes.
He just brings out this pretzel penis. It's like, I can't get rid of this. I've just got this pretzel penis now. It's like tied in knots. But no, he shows him the scar. He shows him that scar on the inside of his thigh. Like, that's what I had after that first encounter.
Oh, you mean like the chainsaw alleged scar?
Yeah, scar.
Yeah.
But
he got that from sex?
Yeah, well, he doesn't know how it got there, but something happened. Meyer said, look, I asked him to draw the creature, and he took my pen and tore off a sheet from a roll of rough, unbleached paper. To my surprise, Meyer said I recognized what he was drawing.
Is it a woman with like a dreadlocked cousin it creature in her pants?
No, this is where the story gets really intriguing. It looked like a figurine that I'd seen excavated from an archaeological site in China from the 1930s.
What?
And this is weird. So this goes back to perhaps considered the founder of Chinese archaeology. His name was Liang Xiong, born in Macau in the early 1900s. And he was really a pioneer. He performed what is thought to be China's first scientific excavation, which was in Qichihe, where he unearthed all these artifacts that were thousands of years old. He was obviously, trained with Western university standards and knew how to do proper archaeology. But in this region in Heilongjiang, where this encounter with Meng took place, Si Yong, this archaeologist, did an archaeological dig there. And he discovered relics from this ancient civilization called the Liang Zhu. And we don't know a lot about them, but it's an incredible discovery. This is one of the oldest civilizations that we have detected in the entire world, like older than the Mesopotamians. And there's been some really incredible recent discoveries. Like, here's another image for the show notes, Aaron. This was in a Newsweek article, but this is basically a satellite image of the Yangtze River.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see under the blue section there, you can see all this like square buildings. You can see the remains of—
like roads?
You can see, exactly. You can see roads. You can see earthworks. You can see the remains of civilization.
Why is it under the river?
That's how old it is.
Wow.
It's been submerged for thousands of years. And here's the quote from the Newsweek article, which I'll link to in the show notes. A recently excavated hydraulic system is rewriting the history of early Chinese engineering. 4 years of research have revealed that the water management system of the Liangzhu culture, this Neolithic society known for their jade objects, took an estimated 3,000 people nearly a decade to build and pushes back the date of China's earliest known large-scale water engineering projects to about 5,100 years ago. But this civilization goes back to like 5,000 BCE or earlier. I think it even goes back to maybe 7,000, they're saying now. But previously, the oldest known systems of this nature were from Mesopotamia, and that's 4,900 years ago.
So what is this, like a lock and a weir system or something?
Well, it was kind of like the Dutch. Like, they built canals. They totally controlled the water. They reclaimed land. They had hydraulic systems to, I guess, have
to regulate
sewage and move things around.
Unlike Beijing today with its fake drains, which is why it
floods. Drains
Beijing? Yeah.
Just goes nowhere.
So I don't know if this is not being reported in Western media. Beijing has just basically been massively flooded, like huge biblical kind of floods. And then what Beijing did is because they don't want to come up against the mandate of heaven, which is the idea that, well, you know, once the government reaches its peak, heaven goes, well, now it's time to get out. And the sign of what the mandate of heaven is that, well, you have to get flooded.
Mm.
Like a flood will cleanse it.
Yeah, right.
That's so right. Beijing diverted all the water away, but they diverted it just into a town that's below them. And so this town below them is experiencing catastrophic floods. There's a lot of, already there's, we know there's political turmoil in China, but even the Chinese people that previously had been, you know, under the spell, I suppose, of the CCP are going, what are you doing? You're flooding our town for the sake of saving Beijing. Like, this is ridiculous. But it turns out, and I'll see if I can link to the video, because you've got Serpent Tsar, you know, they did that great video. The guys used to go around on motorcycles.
Yeah, yeah.
Before they got cleared.
Winston and...
Winston and...
The
other guy. Isn't that terrible? Because they're so good at what they do. But they showed this video of where the drains are fake.
All right.
Like, they're fake. This is what China does. They just built all these fake drains.
You know what, though? A fake drain is better than no drain at all. That's what they say.
Well, when I was talking about the environmental stuff, right? So they've got these photographs of what looks like these rolling green, beautiful hills until you get closer and you find that it's actually been spray-painted green.
It's all spray paint, yeah.
It's all garbage.
Well, they do that because they get like government funding.
Yeah.
For green initiatives.
Yeah.
And when the inspector comes, it's like,
Has to be green.
Let's just paint everything green.
Yeah.
And then we'll bribe him and we'll get, you know, our funding.
It's just,
you know, there's a whole,
crazy.
There's a whole show there of material. Anyway, the sketch that he drew for this author, Michael Mayer, was, let me see if I can bring it up here. It looked exactly like this. It looked exactly like these artifacts that this Si Yong archaeologist dug up from this ancient civilization that's nearly 7,000 years old.
So almond eyes, a broad nose, thin lips, and I'm assuming what is like a semicircular head? Is that what the... Oh, look at that.
Put some of these in the show notes. That is a very strange looking entity. And I've got a bit of a clip here, the gods of ancient Langju. Let's take a listen.
Like many similar objects, it appeared to show a mythical creature called Tao Tia. Under closer analysis, however, archaeologists began to make out details that showed that this tong was very far from typical. Taking a closer look, lines next to the eyes resolve themselves into a pair of hands. These in turn seem to be connected to disproportionately long arms. It was then that the archaeologist realized that this was no ordinary Tao Tia motif. They were looking at the face of a god. What's more, that of a completely unknown deity.
It looks like a creature holding its boobs.
They're boobs.
Yeah.
It's not eyes. It's giant boobs. I'm sorry, but that's what it is.
So he was mesmerized by these interdimensional boobs? Is that what's going on?
That's what he drew. But isn't that weird? Isn't that strange?
It is weird,
that
yeah.
He, you know, this guy, again, he's not educated. Like, maybe he thought up this after the fact, but he sketches what he saw and it matches this god that only now we're discovering was from this ancient civilization.
Unless
it was highly advanced, so advanced they were doing hydraulics 7,000 years ago.
Yeah, I've got nothing to say. It's just...
But there's more to this.
Really?
Michael Myers said that as he was making this sketch, as he made these tiny X's on the alien's inner thighs, I realized Mr. Meng was sketching a hairy cousin of none other than the Michelin Man.
The Michelin Man with...
He said the sketch looked like the Michelin Man. Like the face and everything was like this thing, like this weird thing. But everything else, he's like, it looks like the Michelin Man.
Like the French humanoid reports? When was the Michelin Man? Was that 1954?
Well, in this book from Michael Mayer, he then springs off that and there's like a kind of read between the lines. Okay, this guy's making it up. Obviously, there was like Michelin adverts in China in the 90s.
Sure.
And he saw the Michelin Man and, you know, he's influenced by it. And he's just, he says it's like, but this guy has no idea about all the weird cases mm-hmm. that we've covered. And we did this back in episode 11 of last season. What was that? Back in March this year. The Los Misteriosos Hombres Michelin episode with all those Spanish cases mm-hmm. of the Michelin Men. And this is something we've seen in the French cases as well. We've seen sightings of these Michelin Men type entities all across the world. So now you have this guy claiming this alien abduction in China. Not only does he depict a ancient god only just recently discovered in archaeological digs, but he also just draws it like the Michelin Man. What is going on? What a bizarre case. And yeah, I'm glad I found this today because it's one of the weirdest UFO cases I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was a little bit familiar with his story. I just had no idea that it went this deep. And as you say, like maybe there's an element here of where, you know, he's just had to say the story so many times that maybe he's added to it. But you're absolutely right. Like, how is it that he would have knowledge of this, you know, archaeological dig? The reason why I mentioned the French reports there is like, well, maybe there's a possibility that, you know, so much time has passed that, you know, it's been decades that maybe it somehow filtered through into China and somehow into a remote regional area. But the likelihood of that, and for him to take that and make that up, it seems pretty unlikely.
Yeah, Mayer from that book interviews him at the end and says, look, journalists, this is what Meng says, journalists look for discrepancies in my story, but honestly, I get tired of telling it. He says, in the end, I'm just a peasant. Like, I'm not an expert. I'm not educated. I'm just describing what happened to me. But the next morning, like Mayer stayed at his house. He said the next morning he continued the tale. He said a month after the alien had visited him in bed, he again awoke to find his body passing through the world map over the Kang. So the Kang is like his home and they must have had a map and he just floats through it. He said he levitated through the stratosphere and into a ship where a circle of aliens cloaked him in a robe of flesh.
And so they gave him a body. So they took him out of his body and then gave him a temporary body.
Well, Mayer's, it's funny that you say that because Mayer in the book, obviously, yeah, speaks the language and says, a robe of what? Like, did I mishear your Chinese? And he says, no, a robe of flesh. It's like, what do you mean a robe of flesh? He just says it was a robe of flesh.
It's a container. It's like those container stories that we've heard.
Yeah, like that's...
The bodies are the containers.
I think Mayer thinks he means... Like something he put over him.
Yeah, it's
skin.
Like a cloak, right? Yeah, something out of Silence of the Lambs.
But a robe of flesh sounds like a poetic way of saying, I was given a body.
Yeah.
He said, they spoke to me in Chinese, but with a heavy accent. He said it was very hard to understand them at first. But he said, they told me they were refugees. And like me, they wanted to escape their former lives. So they left their dying home. That's interesting because this guy was a migrant to Manchuria. So I think he left his hometown when he was very young. But Meng apparently asked these ETs if he could see that woman, like that woman that he had sex with 40 times with the braided hair on the inside of her thighs. They told him no, but then they said something to me, he said, that made me hopeful. They said to him, in 60 years on a distant planet, the son of a Chinese peasant will be born.
Why does it take 60 years?
That's the gestation period, dude. Like, you got to grow all that hair.
Maybe it takes like 59 years and 1 month to get out through the hair.
He said, I asked the aliens if I could see my child. They said yes, but they would not tell me where. And he said that's the last encounter he had with them. So, yeah, it's intriguing encounter. I'll link to all the stuff in the show notes. Is it real?
I don't know.
Did he make it up?
I don't know, because
did he have some encounter at the start and then just kind of established it over the years?
I did think that, which is so common with many of these, you know, people that get caught up in this. They do have a real genuine experience, what appears to be a genuine experience, but then perhaps because of the attention, you know, the flat screen TVs keep turning up and then all of a sudden they stop and you're like, oh, I really need a new flat screen TV. So you keep the story going.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you've got a 4K projector in your yurt.
Imagine telling elaborate stories in return for money.
I know. What kind of an asshole would do that?
What scum would do that?
I know.
And imagine just doing it for years on end. With no guilt
about
how ridiculous the stories are. And you just keep like charging money for it. My God, the nerve of people.
People just make me sick, Ben.
So that brings me to the Chinese Rex Gilroy. So this guy's name is Zhang Jingping. And he claims he's, like, he runs his own UFO research organization. Like, when you look up his name, it says he's the head of the Beijing Bureau of this. It sounds very official, but it's just an organization he made up. Like, he just runs it himself. He claims he was contacted by aliens from the planet Dongsheng. He says their Empress Li Guanyin sent a message saying that I should be the ambassador.
Guanyin.
Yeah, the ambassador of their planet. He says it's now one of the most important things I do. So he's this 52-year-old amateur UFO researcher. And according to Zhang, his alien employers hail from Sirius. They're 2 meters tall, can pass through solid walls, and communicate with him through human intermediaries. So he doesn't actually have any contact with them at all. It's like, I guess he's more like John Keel, because John Keel had all these people he was working with, eyewitnesses he would interview and investigate, who claimed they were having contacts with these entities. And these entities, through these eyewitnesses, would communicate with John Keel. Mm. They would lead him on and give him information. So it's like a similar situation. He says they've tasked him with establishing diplomatic relations between their planet and some countries on Earth, promoting science and technology. He says they're just one of the alien civilizations he claims to have come across since he began investigating UFOs in the 1990s. But this is my favorite part. Zhang claims to have sent multiple reports of his findings to China's highest leaders, though he has never received a reply.
And don't expect that reply.
It's kind of reminds me of old Rex.
Well, you're not, yeah, but there's no, you know, plaster casts of giant footprints or crashed alien bodies yet that we know of.
There is a guy in China that is like a Bigfoot expert and he investigates the Yeren.
Yeren, yeah.
And he's convinced that he's convinced they're real, but it's like a patriotic thing. He wants to find them before Westerners find them. That's like his whole drive. He makes it like a nationalism thing. Like, we've got to find this Bigfoot before the Americans find it. Yeah, he's got all these stories.
So, hang on a second. There's like a Bigfoot space race?
Pretty much.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we all know how that turns out.
Well, one of them will probably fake it.
What I'm saying.
Kamala Harris. There'll be Kamala Harris on a jungle set. Encountering Bigfoot. Sitting down interviewing Bigfoot. She'll just go on one of those long speeches. Bigfoot will just die. From
Bigfoot
confusion.
Would understand what's going on.
Like, low IQ? Yeah, we'll link to all that stuff in the show notes. I want to find more on the Chinese Bigfoot guy, but that's like a whole other week of trying to run these things
Yeah, like running it. This is a thing. If you could just quickly read it, it would be a lot easier. But having to run it through translators, and yeah, there's obviously a lot of interpretation there as well.
The Meng Zhao Guo incident. Let us know what you think. Is it real? Is it another just fantasy cooked up by a touched in the head Chinese Northeasterner? You know what they're like, those Northeasterners.
I don't, but I do now, apparently.
Like the people from Guangzhou.
Oh, well.
Stupid in the head. That's what they say. And we had this Chinese friend back in Sydney, and he'd always be like, oh, you're from Guangzhou? Stupid from Guangzhou. Like, that's rude, dude. You actually say that to people from Guangzhou? He's like, yeah, they're too stupid. Stupid from Guangzhou. He used to tell us all the time, everyone he meets from Guangzhou was stupid. We still love it.
Classic.
I'll link to all that stuff in the show notes at mysteriousuniverse.org. More coming up on this show in our Plus extension coming up.
Yes, any illusions you had about the cute nature of the skunk ape is going to be completely eliminated In our Plus extension coming up, we're going to look at stories of killer apes being released across Florida, encounters with the skunk ape, and strange high strangeness that's associated with such activity as well. It's all coming up in the Plus extension right after this.
Head to mysteriousuniverse.org/plus for all the details. Sign up and you get access to the big extensions we do on these shows every single week. You get access to entirely exclusive episodes every single Tuesday as well. And when you sign up for Plus, you get more than double the content. You're getting the huge extensions, the extra shows on Tuesday, and entirely ad-free versions of the show as well. You also get a higher bitrate feed. And if you sign up for MU Max, you get exclusive access to our entire back catalogue as well. Again, it's all at mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. Sign up today. That's a wrap for this free edition of MU. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. If you're on Plus, stick around for the great stuff after the break. Welcome back to your Plus extension. Great.